Services for Social Responsibility presents the Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, going in-depth with the most interesting innovators, changemakers, business leaders, politicians, and activists in Vermont and around the country.
This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is made possible in part by People's United Bank. Find out what know-how can do. A better business relationship. Fairpoint Communications. Small business owners make it big with Fairpoint. Lake Champlain Transportation, a community leader pioneering new paths in business. And by National Life Insurance, for more than 150 years working for a better tomorrow. And by Fletcher Allen Healthcare, in service to the patient, community, and medicine since 1879. And it's made possible by over 1,000 VBSR members.
Here is noted Vermont author David Goodman.
Welcome to this week's Vermont Conversation. Today, we're going to take a little trip to southern Vermont, to Mount Snow, but no, we're not going skiing. We are going to the VBSR 21st Annual Fall Conference. Later in the show, we're going to be joined by the keynote speakers for the conference, Jeffrey and Mika Hollander. Many of you may recognize Jeffrey Hollander's names. He was the founder of Seventh Generation. But first, we're going to go to Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility Executive Director Andrea Cohen to get a little update on what is happening there at the conference at Mount Snow. Andrea, welcome to the conversation.
Hi, David. I'm here with Scott Buckingham, who's the staff person who put together this whole conference. And I have to say, we are just having an amazing day down here. It has just been fantastic so far.
Tell me a little bit about what some of the featured workshops have been that you've been going to.
Yeah. Well, early in the day, there was a little session about networking and how businesses need to get together. Like, you know, you really use your networking time well and smartly. And that was really interesting. A lot of people took away some really good pointers about how to do some business-to-business, you know, connecting. And we had three concurrent workshops right after that in the morning. One was, actually I'll ask Scott to fill in on some of those, what the content was. There was three. I went to one of them on content marketing. And Scott, what's some of the other ones?
Yeah, the other two sessions we had this morning, one was Measuring What Matters, Mission, Metrics, and Management. And kind of the spirit behind this conversation is, you know, we've all, as a business community or individual businesses, trying to make our businesses more sustainable or socially responsible, but sort of in order to understand how we're making progress against what are really alternative goals and objectives, we really need to reevaluate sort of the frameworks that are giving us feedback on our progress towards our goals and objectives. So they were talking about a few different frameworks and models for alternative measurements for things such as gross domestic product and that sort of thing. We had a fantastic panel, included folks from Gross National Happiness, which is an interesting movement, Benchmarks for Better Vermont, and some leaders in our membership that have been using something called the Business Impact Assessment.
Right. This is, and is this related to B Corps in some fashion?
Absolutely. That is one of the instrument that the B Corp community uses to certify itself is something called a business impact assessment. But what a lot of folks don't know is that businesses can use sort of the light version of that assessment to manage and track their own sustainability and other social responsibility activities, goals, and objectives.
Well, and Andrea, if I can ask you mentioned about networking and sort of taking networking to the next level, making it effective and productive. Was there a tip you came away from that with that you might share with our listeners?
Well, one of the things that I thought was really, a lot of people resonated with people, was the whole name tag game. Name tags are a real leveler. Like, everybody that shows up at a business meeting, you know, gets to put something out there to everybody else in the room. So what you actually ask to have on your name tag is very important and will project a certain image and message to people you're meeting. So I thought that was interesting. And also just the whole placement of name tags and, you know, for women and men, you know, it's a whole different thing about where they like to have name tags. So conference organizers need to consider, you know, the people attending and what works for them to facilitate networking. Yeah, it's interesting.
Very interesting. I would not have thought that name tags were so laden with importance. But, you know, these are probably the kind of things that people who go to these things a lot are really eager to hear. You know, what are the little things that matter?
Right. So, you know, and then after the morning workshops, we had a really, really exciting keynote. And Jeffrey and Mika are here and looking forward to talking to you. But Jeffrey's been a real good friend to VBSR over the years, both in his former role at Seven Generation as a co-founder. And what they're working on now is really exciting. And that was a great keynote workshop that everybody attended together.
Hmm. What's coming up this afternoon at the conference?
We've got a packed afternoon, David. We've got three more breakout sessions coming up. We've got a session on employee engagement, which is going to be involving some folks that have done a lot of work at Green Mountain Coffee Roasters and Green Mountain Power and other organizations that we're all familiar with. We've got a policy update. As you know, VBSR does a lot of policy work, and we use our conference to engage with our membership and find out what's important to them and also share some of our upcoming policy positions. And the most popular panel we have in our upcoming sessions is social entrepreneurship. And we've got actually about 80 folks, about half of our conference has signed up for that panel. There's a lot of interest in this space or in the social entrepreneurship ecosystem. And of course, having Jeffrey and Mika here really underscore that.
All right, great. And for people who are interested to, now that you've whetted their appetite about the conference in Mount Snow, what is an event, the next event VBSR is going to be, you know, for people to stay tuned for?
Let's see, next event, you know, I'm going to put the date for our spring conference out there. How about that? May 14th.
Okay.
What I would put about out there right now, and stay tuned to VBSR.org. Or hit our Facebook page, or follow us, and you'll be getting all of our events for 2014 as we announce them.
And where will the spring conference be?
That will happen at UVM's Davis Center.
Okay, very good.
Hey.
Is there any are Jeffrey and Mika in the neighborhood there? Are we?
Yeah, Jeffrey's sitting right next to me right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, maybe this is a good time to transition over from you guys to your keynote speakers.
Excellent. I'm going to pass the phone to Jeffrey. Hold on.
How are you?
Very good. And for listeners who are just tuning in, you're listening to the Vermont Conversation, and we'll be spending the rest of the show with Jeffrey Hollander and Mika Hollander. Many listeners are familiar with Jeffrey Hollander, was the founder of Seventh Generation and is also on the board of Greenpeace USA. And Jeffrey, you are now launching a new business with your daughter Mika, who is a recent graduate of the New York University Stern School of Business. Tell me a little bit about your new venture.
Sure. So the new company is called Sustain. It will be producing the first non-toxic, fair trade, sustainably produced condom. We will be launching the product in March of 2014. And it is unique in a number of ways, not just because it's non-toxic and it's fair trade and sustainably produced, but we are also targeting women. Women today purchase about 40% of all condoms, and yet there really is no brand that is targeted to them and really addresses their needs and their interests. So we're focusing on women. We also have a condom that is vegan, a condom that is not tested on animals, has no GMOs, and, of course, Sustain will be a B corporation as well.
What was the genesis of this idea and this product line?
So about 20 years ago, I trademarked the name Rainforest Rubbers, and I had the idea of going into the Amazon basin and employing indigenous rubber tappers to make condoms in a truly sustainable fashion. I was running Seventh Generation and too busy and never really pursued that idea until quite recently when I teamed up with my daughter to start Sustain. And I think our passion is that, the concept of Sustain really connects the dots of so many of the different challenges that we face. By being a fair trade company, we're helping deal with issues from hunger to providing health care and education. The very product itself obviously deals with AIDS and various forms of STDs and HPVs, but also helping women control the size of their families has a huge positive impact on hunger as well as global climate change, because we probably don't need as many people on the planet as we have today. And as we all know, the 7 billion population is projected to go to 9 billion in the not too distant future.
You know, I actually have some insight into the rubber, not condoms, but the, you know, the latex rubber business. I was in Liberia in Africa on the rubber plantation of the Firestone Company, and I was actually there looking into child labor practices. And one of the things I saw is that these rubber plantations, which, you know, are located in tropical climates, child labor is a rampant problem. Toxic chemicals that are used to make the rubber. You know, it was difficult to breathe being around some of the, you know, the substances that they were using to boil the rubber with. So it was a very grim picture. So tell me a little bit about how you're addressing those issues with the natural condoms that you're marketing.
Sure. And, you know, I think you're right. I mean, we often value a product for what it does and don't ask the questions about where it came from. So I think the first issue, which is critical, is the fair trade issue. So the plantation we use in southern India is really the first plantation of scale to be certified as fair trade by the Fair Rubber Association. That fair trade certification provides additional income to the rubber tappers. The plantation provides a school, so all the children, 1,000 children, get a completely free education. The plantation has built a hospital, so there's 100% free health care. So, I mean, fair trade is foundational and important, and we need to spread the notion of fair trade beyond coffee and cocoa and cotton to a lot of the other commodities that are fraught with problems like child labor. The plantation is also the only Forest Stewardship Council certified plantation, and that deals with the use of chemicals and pesticides and the fundamental sustainability of the way the plantation is operated. Achieving that certification was a 7-year process. And luckily, the family that owns the plantation has been in the organic tea business, understands the benefit of these types of certification programs, and was really very visionary in being the first one to bring that into the rubber industry.
Hmm. Mika, I'd like to bring you into the conversation here. When did your father first propose the idea of going into business together to you?
Nisa, are you there?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Sure. I'm just, now you graduated from the NYU Stern School of Business. When was that?
I just graduated in May of this year.
So when did your father propose the idea of going into business together?
So it was actually kind of a evolution of a proposal. Last summer, you know, the summer of 2012, we were starting to think about and put together a plan for the business, and I was involved in that, but hadn't, you know, officially decided that I would be starting the business with Jeffrey and Sheila, my mother. And then I think a lot of it, you know, it just came from as I explored other job opportunities and really figured out and was trying to figure out how I could have the most direct impact
over, you know, about 8 months ago when I was kind of expressing my frustrations with joining a larger company, and, you know, Jeffrey was starting this company. He started, you know, planting the seed of the idea of me getting involved and how I could be involved. And I think that just over the next few months, we kind of saw how that could happen. And I kind of started to envision myself in that role. And that, so it was kind of, it wasn't like a, you know, here's your job description, are you in, are you out? It was more of a kind of building the idea of the business together and myself starting to realize that I actually could bring a lot to the table.
What do you feel that you bring to the table?
I mean, I think that, you know, one of the great advantages of Sustain and of me working and building Sustain is that I am the demographic that we're trying to target. So I'm constantly surrounded by the women that we are trying to speak to and that we're trying to access and that we're trying to get insights from. You know, that just makes it, I mean, I'm sure there's a flip side to that, but at the moment, it's just been really beneficial to kind of be able to look at our product from the kind of through the eyes of our consumer, because I am the consumer. And then something that I spoke about at the conference today was also just, you know, I grew up in a very different time than Jeffrey did. I've grown up with the internet. I know, you know, how people communicate, how, you know, attention spans have only been getting shorter and shorter among millennials. And I understand that. And so, you know, we make this joke about, you know, when we're trying to get information across, Jeffrey wants to get it across in 3 or 4 pages of kind of this content. And I'm like, no, we need 100 sentences. That's just, nobody's going to read that. And, you know, whether that's good or bad or depressing or enlightening, it's just kind of the way that things are right now. So I think I bring really the insight of demographic that we're targeting, as well as just really understanding what the digital era means in terms of building a brand today.
When your dad, or I guess both your parents, talked about you know, the product and that you're going to be marketing, and were there any awkward moments around the issue of building a father-daughter company around condoms?
Honestly, which is probably really hard to believe, no. I mean, I think that have there been meetings where we're discussing vibrating, you know, condoms and different types of lubricants and who's going to test the product? Yes, that has happened. It's not, you know, business as usual at all, but I think we really, and something that was actually very scary for me was we are such a tight-knit, open family. We have such strong personal relationships, and I was worried, you know, not about it being an uncomfortable product to talk about, but more about how are we going to now add in a professional relationship and layer to our relationship that we didn't have before. So for me, it was, you know, the fear or the any hesitation I had was never about awkward conversations around the product, but more just about, you know, is family business a good, you know, endeavor?
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, because this is, of course, a very old school model that really got sort of tossed aside in the last few decades. But of course, you know, the businesses, Steinway and Sons, you know, any number of companies that are followed by and Sons. So this is both a return to roots, sharing it within the family, but also breaking with that tradition by having it be your daughter, you know, a daughter who's joining in. What are the challenges of being in business together with your own parents?
You know, something that was really interesting, just to kind of set the stage, was when we were deciding to go in on this together, I went to a lot of my peers and talked to them and sought their advice about exactly all the things that you're talking about. What are the challenges of joining a family business? You know, does it ruin the relationship? You know, what should I look out for? What should I kind of keep on my mind of things to not do? And, you know, in terms of a roadmap for family business, it's all about people who have joined an established company and how do they fit in and how do they kind of adjust the ways to transition into, like, you know, a new generation. And we didn't really have that. I mean, there was no roadmap for starting something together from day one that I could find or anyone that I really could talk to. So, you know, just going back to what I said earlier, I think for us, it's really just about, the challenge is just really, for us, just keeping the personal relationship as strong as it always was when adding in this kind of layer of a professional relationship. And it's not easy. It's difficult, and it's, you know, everything, you know, some things we like to say, oh, well, this is just about the business, but really everything's about the business and our personal relationships and, you know, us as people now. So I think for us, the main challenge is just always making sure we keep our personal relationships as strong as they always have been, while also building a really strong professional relationship.
And, you know, David, as I spent some time studying family businesses relative to corporate responsibility, and one of the things that I found that was very encouraging is when you look at companies, whether it's SC Johnson or W.L. Gore, family businesses often have a tendency to think in a much more long-term fashion than traditional businesses, because they're thinking about their legacy, they're thinking about their heritage, they're thinking about a very different time horizon than we find in public companies where the average CEO is in place for 4 years or less. So I think that this notion of family business is one that we want to encourage and we want to bring back, because it comes with that long-term perspective that is very much aligned with thinking about sustainability and having an impact today that will be good for the next generation and the generation thereafter.
We're speaking today with Jeffrey Hollander and Mika Hollander, a father-daughter team starting a new venture called Sustain, of sustainable condoms. Jeffrey Hollander, the founder of Seventh Generation. Jeffrey, a lot is usually assumed about what the child learns from the parent, but I'm curious if you could tell me, what have you learned from Mika?
Well, I learn a lot. I mean, I can tell you that, first of all, the best business decision I've made was to have Mika join me at Sustain. And Mika touched on some of these things. I mean, I communicate in a very, very different style than her generation does. And I don't understand social media the way she does. I don't understand our customer the way she does. And so she has sort of forced us to take detailed, complex, very long-winded information and package in a way that is accessible to her generation. But it's also not just information, it's design, it's packaging, it's almost everything we do is the look and feel and personality of the brand. I really couldn't imagine creating a brand for young women when I'm basically an old white man. I am just the wrong person to do that. Now, I know a lot about sales. I know a lot about finances. There's a lot of things where I have strengths, but it's together we have a much more robust set of capabilities than either one of us would have alone.
What are you working on? Mika mentioned you'll be launching this new line of fair trade, sustainable, I guess, can you say organic condoms? I don't know.
They're not organic. They are sustainable, but they're not organic. We would like to have them certified organic. That would probably be about a five-year process.
And so what are you working on? We just have a minute before the news break, but it's now end of November. What are you focused on right at this moment?
Well, Mika's hard at work getting the website done. We finished the packaging. We're beginning to make presentations to retailers in December. And the goal is to have the product shipped to the United States in February and on the market in March.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a break for a few minutes of news, and we'll be back on the other side of the half hour with Jeffrey and Mika Hollander to talk about their new father-daughter business venture together.
Looking for a loan for your Vermont business, childcare, or nonprofit organization? Look at the Vermont Community Loan Fund. Because at the Vermont Community Loan Fund, we lend to Vermont businesses and nonprofits, even if the bank says you're not quite ready for a loan. At the Vermont Community Loan Fund, we focus on people, not profits. We'll work closely with you before and after you get your loan to make sure you get what you need to succeed. The Vermont Community Loan Fund makes loans to early stage companies and established businesses ready to take the next step. We lend to farms and food producers, high-tech businesses, manufacturers, retailers, childcare businesses, affordable housing developers, service providers, and other nonprofit organizations. We make loans to Vermonters doing business right here at home and around the world. So if you're looking for financing to help your growing business, look at the Vermont Community Loan Fund. Visit us online at investinvermont.org. That's investinvermont.org.
Hey, we'll return to Vermont Conversation with David Goodman in just a few moments. Update on some of the world and national news. Your weather forecast as we move along throughout the afternoon. Looks like bright sunshine continuing, some blue skies, but continue cold with the highs today in the low to mid-30s. Clear tonight. Overnight lows will be around 20. We're looking at partly cloudy weather tomorrow. Going to warm up just a little bit, 40 to 45 degrees. Currently, we're now looking at 36 degrees here at WDEV.
Belmont. A freshman congressman says he's hit bottom. He pleaded guilty in Washington this morning to possessing cocaine.
Republican Congressman Trey Radel of Florida pleaded guilty in Washington, D.C. Superior Court to a misdemeanor charge of possessing cocaine. He was sentenced to a year of probation. The first-term congressman admitted buying 3.5 grams of cocaine from an undercover agent last month. As he entered his guilty plea, Radel told the court he's hit a bottom where he realizes he needs help. After the charges were made public, Radel issued a statement saying his struggle with alcoholism led him to make what he called an extremely irresponsible choice. Jerry Bodlander, Capitol Hill.
Radel's lawyer says his client already has entered outpatient treatment in Washington, will also seek treatment in Florida. Now, if Radel successfully completes this 1 year of probation, the charge against him will be dismissed. AP Update. I'm John Belmont.
It's mid-November, and that means one thing and one thing only, sock sale. Called the eighth wonder of the world, the annual Cabot Hosiery Mills sock sale is back bigger and better than ever. The 34th annual Cabot Hosiery Mills sock sale is Saturday and Sunday, November 16th and 17th, and Saturday and Sunday, November 23rd and 24th, from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at the mill in Northfield. As always, we'll have more socks than you can shake a stick at. Many items, buy one, get one free. Most prices, same as last year. Cold weather hunting socks, run, hike, ski, and snowboard socks, merino wool and Cool Max, novelty and holiday patterns, real U.S. military surplus socks, and plus sizes for the hardiest of feet. Everything you love about our socks, plenty of them, most at last year's prices, and many items, buy one, get one free. 10% off any purchase over $100. Don't miss this sale. Saturday and Sunday, November 16th and 17th, and Saturday and Sunday, November 23rd and 24th, from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at the mill in Northfield. This is Rick Cabot for Cabot Hosiery Mills, and we absolutely, positively feel that the best thing you can do for you, your feet, your family, and friends is a few more pair of buy one, get one free socks at the eighth wonder of the world, the Cabot Hosiery Mills annual sock sale. Don't miss it.
Businesses for Social Responsibility is pleased to make the Vermont Conversation with David Goodman available.
This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is made possible in part by People's United Bank. Find out what know-how can do. A better business relationship. Fairpoint Communications. Small business owners make it big with Fairpoint. Lake Champlain Transportation. A community leader pioneering new paths in business. And by National Life Insurance, for more than 150 years, working for a better tomorrow. And by Fletcher Allen Healthcare, in service to the patient, community, and medicine since 1879. And it's made possible by over 1,000 VBSR members.
Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. Our guests this week are a father-daughter team of a new business venture. Jeffrey Hollander is known to many as the founder and former CEO of Seventh Generation, which he built into a leading natural product brand. And he's also the author of 7 books and co-chair of Greenpeace USA, as well as the co-founder and board chair of the American Sustainable Business Council, a coalition of 140,000 business leaders committed to progressive public policy. His partner in this new venture is his daughter, Mika Hollander. Mika is a graduate of the New York University Stern School of Business. She was the president of the Social Enterprise Association at school. And they're now launching a new line of sustainable condoms, fair trade and natural. Mika, one of the things that you mentioned before the break, and that both of you mentioned, was that something different about the condoms that you're going to be marketing are that they are aimed at women. So tell me how you're going about things differently than the traditional makers of condoms and who you're targeting.
Sure. So there are really a couple things that we're doing. I like to really talk about the three ways that we're targeting women. First, it's really just we've created a better product, we believe. You know, by being sustainable, by being non-toxic, we're actually creating a product that women specifically are going to be more interested in as they're concerned with usually toxins and other parts of their personal care product routine. Secondly, the design of the product is just completely different from what you're currently seeing on shelf. When you go in front of the condom aisle today, you see lots of bright colors, bold symbols. You know, it's all about the bells and whistles and what they're adding constantly to the product to make, you know, for more pleasure. But when we've spoken to women, they're really just like, I want something that works. I want something from a brand that I can trust. And it would be great if it didn't look like a bright purple box that was in my purse that was kind of obvious to everyone else that I was carrying condoms. So our design is just much more discreet and much more contemporary, and really we feel addresses the needs of women and makes them feel more comfortable carrying our product around with them in order to be prepared and protect themselves. Another thing that we're doing that I like to talk about is that we're really trying to change the conversation around contraception, particularly as it pertains to condoms among women. When you talk to women today, they are, you know, very uncomfortable with the whole purchasing process of condoms, everything from standing in the aisle and feeling like people are looking at them to feeling like the guy behind the counter is almost judging them. And I just find that, you know, a little bit, it really upsets me, and I find it to be a little absurd that women who are trying to go out there and protect themselves are actually having a negative, you know, experience when trying to be responsible. So what we're doing is trying to put our product in places that we feel are more comfortable than traditional condom retail. So, you know, by being online, by partnering with retailers where it's mostly women shopping, where they feel like they can actually ask questions of the salespeople, those are the types of retail partners we're really trying to partner with. And really just start a conversation and change the dialogue by just getting women to talk about contraception and condoms. And, you know, a lot of the time, and really today what we're seeing is the AIDS epidemic has kind of been, it's a little bit far removed from people's minds today. When you talk to young people, the main concern in terms of engaging in sex is that they're going to get pregnant. And STDs are really still such a problem. They're a growing epidemic, but nobody's really talking about it. So we hope that by informing people that this is still really an issue and that, you know, just taking the pill is not enough when you're trying to protect yourself from STDs is kind of what I see as the opportunity in terms of engaging with women. And I don't personally believe that other brands on the market are really addressing those needs.
How do you start a conversation with women about something that they traditionally have been reluctant to talk about in public?
You know, I think that's a great question. And I think what I'm seeing and what we're seeing as a company is that this conversation around female empowerment, whether it's in the workplace or whether it's in the family or at home, is a constantly growing and developing conversation. And, you know, even just from reading the blogs that I read that are all targeted at millennial women, you know, every day there seems to be a topic on sex or dating or, you know, relationships. And so I think, you know, this is the conversation that all women are having among each other. They're always talking about relationships and boys and sex. And I think it's over time, not just because of us, obviously, but just because of the way the media has been going, the conversation has been growing, has been getting kind of momentum. So I think for us, it's really just about tapping into that and getting the contraceptive piece into the conversation. I think that women, particularly young women, are getting more comfortable with themselves and dating and hooking up and that whole hookup culture, and they're becoming more in control of it, and we just don't want this really critical component of that to kind of be left out of the conversation.
We're talking with Mika Hollander and Jeffrey Hollander. Jeffrey, the founder of Seventh Generation, now starting a new venture with his daughter Mika of sustainable condoms. Jeffrey, this is a $1 billion-a-year business, the condom business, and it's a toxic business. How can a small company like this new company you're starting, Sustain, change that toxic industry?
Well, I think there's a lot of parallels to what we accomplished at Seventh Generation. We were, over the past 25 years at Seventh Generation, very effective at changing first the disclosure around chemicals in household products, and then following that disclosure, reformulation to safer chemicals. So you have to start by asking the question. You have to start by encouraging consumers to ask, how were these condoms made? Where did they come from? What chemicals are in the manufacturing process? And I think because this is a product that is inside a woman's body, there is a heightened concern around the category already. We just have to start the conversation. And our goal is to bring the industry to the same high standards that we are setting for ourselves. We would like to ensure that everyone has a safer condom. We would like to ensure that none of the latex harvested for any condoms around the world was harvested by children who should be in school, by children that don't have an adequate access to education or health care. So I think, unlike some product categories, when consumers are exposed to some of the negative things around the condom industry, they will be eager to demand the condom companies do better. And again, importantly, our message is always, we don't want people to stop using condoms. Condoms are critical. We want more people to use them. We just want more better condoms.
So tell me a little bit about the toxins that are used in condoms, the things that people should be concerned about, and what we know about how the body interacts with some of these chemicals in the conventional condoms.
Sure. So the German government about 18 months ago did a pretty exhaustive study around condoms. They particularly looked at a chemical called nitrosamines, which is a carcinogenic chemical, and they found that 80% of condoms had some level of nitrosamines in them. That's of primary concern because that's a carcinogen. But there's other chemicals that are used in the process. When we were in the laundry detergent business, there are chemicals called masking agents that are poured into laundry detergents to prevent your nose from being able to smell the natural odor of the chemicals. Well, there's similar masking agents used in condoms. It's called the Zeus odor detector. And while that is safe for people to use, it's a highly toxic chemical that is dangerous in the workplace. So we basically moved through the entire supply chain, looked at every ingredient that was used at every step in the process, and wherever we could, substituted a safer alternative or a safer process. Does that mean Sustain condoms are perfect? Absolutely not. We have a long way to go before we have a perfect condom. One of the challenges we face is that to get FDA approval, you have to use a silicone lubricant, which is a petroleum-based lubricant. Our hope is that over the next 2 years, we can get approval to use a organic vegetable-based lubricant.
What, in terms of going out through alternative channels to reach people, what do you lose and what do you gain?
Well, again, we're not going exclusively to alternative channels. Drugstores are where most people buy condoms, and it's a critical place for Sustain to be. But when we did research, and we had a panel of about 450 women we spoke with, they really liked the idea of also being able to buy condoms online. They liked the privacy of it. They like the ability to acquire much greater information and depth of information than they could in a retail store. So selling online ourselves through our own website as well as third-party retailers, e-tailers, will be very important. And it's all about, the goal is to create a positive experience a safe experience, an experience that, as Mika said, women are proud to do. It is so unfortunate that doing something that is so critical to your health and your well-being is something that anyone should be ashamed of or embarrassed of. That's a huge challenge, and it's one of the most important objectives of our business, is to change that experience, to change those feelings, and to hope that we can help contribute to women feeling much more safer and comfortable and empowered about taking care of this aspect of their own reproductive health care.
So, Jeffrey Hollander, you have had long experience in both starting and running businesses as you started Seventh Generation. What mistakes have you learned from in your career that you are now trying to do differently or better as you start a new business?
Sure. You know, as I look out over my career, and this is my fourth business, Seventh Generation was my third business, some of the things that I think are critical are to really pay a huge amount of attention to where your money comes from and who's giving it to you. And are the values of your investors really deeply aligned with your own values? And that's a very hard thing to do, because it's hard enough to raise money. It's even harder to find values-aligned money. And we were very lucky to utilize something called Circle Up, which is a crowdfunding source based in California that raises capital from individuals for responsible businesses. We got about 25% of our capital from them. That was not something that was available to me earlier in my career. I also think governance is very important. We've set up Sustain so that we as founders perpetually control the board, and we can ensure that our mission, vision, and values are embedded in the history of the company and all the decisions we make, and that's in addition to becoming a B Corporation as well. So governance is very important. We also set the company up where the employees would elect their own representative to the board of the company. Another thing that we started at Seventh Generation that I feel very is critical is to control how much the most well-paid employees make relative to the lowest paid. So we have a salary cap ratio of 10 to 1, which is very different. When you think about large public companies, the CEO is usually making about 500 times what the lowest paid employee is making. But I think at the end of the day, governance is something that is underappreciated and does not get enough attention. The governance of the company does control many aspects of it. And again, B Corp is a big step in the right direction. But we really have to pay attention to make sure how our values are not just expressed in the business, but protected in the bylaws of the company.
And how have you been able to do that? I mean, there are certainly, you know, a lot of stories right here in Vermont of socially responsible companies, you know, founders, you among them, Ben and Jerry, others, who lost control of their businesses, often, you know, in situations not of their choosing. So how do you keep that from happening again?
Well, I think foundationally, I mean, you know, you have to be careful about whose money you take. That's critical. But I think that having control of the board in perpetuity is probably the most important thing. There's other things that you can do, like have super majority voting shares, so that the founders have 10 votes for every one vote that outside investors have. But it really comes down to control. In almost every case, mine included, I no longer had control of the company. As the business grows, as the company takes more and more capital, the ownership position of the founders is diluted, and they are at the mercy of the board and outside investors. If you want to control your values, you have to control the ownership, the board and the voting shares of the business. Otherwise, I think that you're at risk for someone coming in who has a different perspective and a different belief system and different goals and objectives than you do.
Did you have any reservations about going into business with your daughter? Did you and your wife, Sheila, pause before diving into this?
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge step. And as Mika said, the biggest issue is, will the business relationship put the personal relationship at risk? We have a wonderful family. We have three kids. We are fortunate to be very close. And the last thing we would want is for anything to have a negative effect on that relationship. So I definitely saw it as a risk. And just yesterday, we had a Hollander family business meeting to check in and see how everyone was doing, to talk about how we can make our relationship work better, what was working, what wasn't working, how we need to change. And in order to maintain that healthy relationship, whether it's in business, whether it's in our family, whether it's in a marriage, it takes a lot of work, it takes a lot of attention, it takes a lot of focus. And usually when these relationships don't work, it's because people stopped investing that energy in them.
Mika Hollander, I'm curious, going into business, you know, often couples are doing this around Vermont. I've certainly interviewed a number of companies that are based on couples, but in your case, it's a father-daughter. So practically speaking, it would be interesting for listeners to hear, what do you do to manage this and make it work, both on a business sense, but, to keep your relationship with your family intact?
I think it's kind of, there are two parts to that. One is just, I think any entrepreneur struggles with setting boundaries in terms of, designating time to do work and designating time to really disconnect. And I think most entrepreneurs will probably tell you that they don't ever disconnect, which I know is something that can be a struggle. So I think in terms of how that relates to family, we spend a lot of time together. We spend a lot of time, working together, but also, when I'm in Vermont, I'm staying at our house and we're surrounded by each other constantly. And I think the best thing we try and do is, we're very respectful of each other in terms of when we want to talk about business outside of, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. We don't just kind of talk about business all the time. We've created a system where we really approach each other if it's outside of those hours and ask if, they're open to talking about the business at that time, because otherwise it can just become really overwhelming and you never get to escape. And the other part of that, I think what helps is having two of our family members, my two younger siblings, not be part of the business formally. When the five of us are all together, they don't want to talk about the company 100% of the time. So I think that also kind of helps us create a sense of boundary around how much we should really be talking about the business outside of the typical work day.
What is the expectation for your siblings about the possibility of them joining the business?
We embrace them. My brother is a graphic designer and programmer, and, I'm constantly asking him for things here and there. And, interestingly enough, neither one of them has really expressed any interest in joining the company. They're both extremely artistic and not really, I would say they don't want to enter the business world or go to business school necessarily. So it's interesting that, although they're obviously excited about the business, neither one of them really feels like this is something they would want to formally join in the near future.
Now, in the world of startup companies, many, perhaps most startups fail. How do you keep this one and make it successful?
Well, fortunately, I think I've had a little more experience than most people. As I said, this is my fourth startup. And I think that we prepared much more extensively. So we spent a good year doing research, collecting information, developing plans before we even decided to go ahead and start the business. Secondly, we were able to, as is a challenge for many people, raise a significantly greater amount of capital. One of the biggest reasons that people go out of business is that they run out of money, and it's really hard for startups to raise capital. Our goal was to raise enough money so that we would never have to go back and have a second round of financing. Whether that's true or not, time will tell. But we did create a much bigger and longer cushion. And I think the third thing that is unique is that because of how many years I've been in business, how many people I know, we have an amazing network of terrific people. And the vast majority of the people involved with Sustain, including Mika, have been involved with Seventh Generation one way or another over its history. And there is a much lower risk in hiring people that you have that kind of history with than if you're starting a business and you're hiring employees whom you haven't worked with before.
Hmm. So in a condom business, how do you product test?
Give them away to as many friends as possible. Mika can talk about that better than I can, since most of my friends aren't using condoms at this age.
Mika, what would your answer be?
Yeah, well, so just, you know, a question that we get, just to clarify, you know, all of in terms of testing, obviously all condoms are Class II medical devices. The FDA will test and approve all of our products. But, yeah, from just kind of a pleasurability standpoint and just making sure they kind of are on par, if not better, than what we have on the market, there was definitely a lot of giving product to friends, having them write me about their experience, and of course promising them that it would be circulated to the team anonymously. But you would be surprised, you know, it's funny, every guy that you tell, every, you know, young guy that you say, oh, I'm starting a condom company, they say, oh, can I do product testing? But then, funnily enough, a bunch of people, when it came time when I was like, oh, no, actually, you can do product testing. Here's the product. Please write me and tell me what you think. They were kind of mortified that I would be asking them that. So it was just, you know, interesting to see how guys, you would think, who say that they would be so interested in it, were actually embarrassed when it came down to it.
How do you recruit them to stay on and actually participate then?
I mean, we just had plenty. Thankfully, not all of the people I know were mortified and uncomfortable doing that. But, you know, we had plenty of friends and peers that were happy to try our product, even if they weren't using them regularly.
So tell me about the plan ahead now for the launch and where people can find your products, both online and in stores.
So we're getting ready to launch, you know, in quarter one of next year. In terms of finding product, we'll first launch online on our own website, which is sustaincondoms.com, and also partner with other, you know, bigger online retailers that are probably already selling condoms or selling, you know, similar categories. And then we're really, from a kind of brick-and-mortar retail strategy standpoint, we have, you know, we're obviously excited to work with people we know, like Whole Foods, and some of the more mass channels like Target and drugstores. But we're also trying to look for retail partners that we call kind of untraditional condom retailers.
Okay, so, Mika, we are going to have to leave it there. We've been talking with Mika Hollander and Jeffrey Hollander. Jeffrey, the founder of Seventh Generation, and together with his daughter, launching a new line of sustainable condoms. Thank you, Jeffrey and Mika, for joining us in the Vermont Conversation.
Our
pleasure. Thank you, David.
You have been listening to the Vermont Conversation with host David Goodman. Tune in next Wednesday when, once again, Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility and its over 1,000 VBSR members bring you David Goodman with this special program.
This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is made possible in part by People's United Bank. Find out what know-how can do. A better business relationship. Fairpoint Communications. Small business owners make it big with Fairpoint. Lake Champlain Transportation, a community leader pioneering new paths in business, and by National Life Insurance, for more than 150 years working for a better tomorrow, and by Fletcher Allen Healthcare, in service to the patient, community, and medicine since 1879. And it's made possible by over 1,000 VBSR members.
You are listening to the stations of Radio Vermont, 96.1 WDEV FM in Warren, FM 96.5 in Barrie, and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier.
John Belmont. President Obama has laid a wreath and paused by the eternal flame at the Arlington grave of President John F. Kennedy.